Despite less money and name recognition than the incumbent, some think MJ Hager has a strong chance of making political history in November. Our conversation on today's Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
I'm David Brown. Many political analysts think Air Force veteran and teacher MJ Hager has the best chance of reclaiming a seat in the U.S. Senate for Texas Democrats than anyone in two decades. Our conversation coming up. Also, what losing a newspaper means for a Texas town, a teacher's struggle to wear a Black Lives Matter mask at school, and 80 million unrequested ballots sent to voters, a PolitiFact check of that claim by the president, plus a whole lot more, when the Texas Standard gets underway, right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard time on the 16th day of September 2020. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. Try to remember back those months before the pandemic. Political wags were looking at the coffers of the respective candidates in some of the top races in Texas, and were a little surprised to see that early on incumbent Senator John Cornyn, a Republican, had built up such a large campaign war chest he'd be tough to beat in November, or so they said. At that point, of course, the Democrats had yet to settle on a candidate. Fast forward to the present, and there are few political observers anywhere in the country uninterested in the race for Cornyn's Senate seat representing Texas. In what is often mischaracterized as a solidly red Lone Star State, a serious race is developing between Cornyn and Democratic challenger MJ Hager, an Air Force veteran and teacher. Recent polls suggest that despite Cornyn's war chest, this race could well prove historic. The last Democrat to serve as U.S. Senator from Texas was Bob Krueger over two decades ago. A little more than a week ago, we had the chance to talk to Senator Cornyn on our broadcast, and he told us he'd barely had time to do much campaigning. At the time, he was back in Washington working on a COVID-19 relief package, something that has yet to emerge from Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, this week, his opponent has launched her first statewide campaign ads and challenged Cornyn to a total of three televised debates as the clock ticks down to Election Day. The Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate from Texas, MJ Hager, joins us now. Welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Well, let's get to those numbers and why so many people watching politics in Texas are really interested in this race. A poll this month done by UT Tyler, Dallas Morning News, indicates you're closing the gap. Still 11 percentage points behind, and apparently, according to analysts, a lot of voters still undecided, and there's an issue of name recognition. But Democrats in Texas are perceived as being far more competitive in this election cycle. How do you explain the lag in the polls at this juncture? What would you say?
Well, a couple things. Polling isn't something that I really pay that much attention to, but there have been multiple polls showing us anywhere from 1 point down to 3 to 4 to 6. So, I mean, you know, polling in Texas is kind of different because for so long we've been the 49th or 50th state in the nation for voter turnout. And you tend to poll reliable voters, people with a reliable voting history. So when twice as many people are showing up to the polls, half those people are not reflected in that polling. And that's why even 538 recently came out and talked about how statewide candidates in Texas tend to overperform whenever the polling shows. So, you know, the most recent poll showing us 4 points down, we'll take that. But to be honest with you, you know, the fundraising advantage that John Cornyn has, you have to expect that from a guy who, you know, is taking so much money from the private detention centers and the gun lobby and, you know, from the Koch network. We're a grassroots campaign. Our average online donation is only $23. And yet, grassroots is not code for not raising enough money. We are raising millions of dollars. We've raised millions just in the last couple months, and are starting to catch up and take away that financial advantage. And I would take the grassroots momentum across the state with regular Texans standing up and wanting better over corporate donors any day.
Well, now let's talk a little bit about that that fundraising advantage, because most of that money, as most folks know, goes to media. You're now getting out there with campaign ads. How do you sustain that, especially when you have the issue of name recognition?
Yeah, I mean, we've been able to raise enough that we went up on the air sooner than we thought we were going to be able to. So it doesn't feel like we're trying to sustain a campaign with so little. The fact that we raised $1 million in the first week after the runoff in July, I mean, our momentum just ramped up significantly after we won the runoff. And like I said, we've raised, you know, I can't release the amount, but we've raised millions in the last 2 months alone. So, you know, it's not really a question of whether or not we're going to have enough money. We're going to have enough money because Texas has really come together and insisted that we put forward our best, you know, our best foot in this race. But, you know, the question of name recognition, John Cornyn's been in office for 18 years and with his name ID, right, you know, just over 2/3 and me sitting at, you know, if he's at, I think the most recent numbers I saw were 67 for him and 57 for me. We're pretty darn proud of that. There's challengers across the country that are in the teens, you know? And so yeah, we still have some work to do, but we've got about 4 weeks now until early vote starts. I'm really excited about the debates because John Cornyn does not have a record he can run on. You know, misstating my position on things in hopes that he can scare people into voting for him. And that's going to be really hard for him to do when we're standing next to each other on a debate stage.
Well, now, it was just announced that first debate between you and John Cornyn is October 9th. What issues are you going to try to hammer on? What do you think are most important for Texans right now that you want to address?
Well, I mean, I just am really tired of politicians politicizing our healthcare, whether it's the, you know, the healthcare crisis that we had here in Texas before COVID-19, or, you know, the misinformation and the lies. Like I said, it's a lot harder to do when we're both standing there side by side and I have an opportunity to correct the record. But I'm really looking forward to talking to Texans about his voting record. His voting record does not match the things that he says. And so that tells me that he says the things that, you know, he knows are popular, like protecting pre-existing conditions, but then he turns around and votes 20 times to dismantle the Affordable Care Act without putting up any other plan to protect pre-existing conditions. So he knows that tearing down the Affordable Care Act right now with nothing to replace it with in the middle of a pandemic would strip Texans, millions of Texans, of their health care. And right now we have, before the pandemic, we had nearly 1 out of 5 Texans without insurance. Which, by the way, when I worked for 5 years in healthcare, I learned quickly that that was the cause of why we were shuttering so many rural hospitals and why healthcare costs were so high, was because we were providing so much care to people who didn't have an ability to pay. But now, given the fact that it's employer-provided healthcare model, now because of the record unemployment, we have 1 out of 3 Texans aged 18 to 65 without access to health insurance. And that means that they can't afford to go get a COVID test if they have symptoms. It's very difficult to shut down a pandemic and get our economy up and running again when so many people don't have access to healthcare. So I would say healthcare would be the central thing, but he has certainly sold us out and betrayed us on campaign promises over and over again. And I'm going to make sure that Texas voters know that.
I'm curious about whether or not, I mean, there is this name recognition issue, and I want to go back to that because it's important that when you ran for Congress earlier, there was a lot of emphasis placed on your ad campaign in which you emphasized your status as a veteran of the Air Force. Do you think that that's, I mean, how much is that a selling point in Texas, getting across this idea, at least to Texans who might be more conservatively minded and trying to win them over with the fact that you have served the country? I mean, is that something that you are thinking of as a strategy here?
Well, you know, veterans don't tend to like to talk about their service. It is something that goes against my my gut and my personality. I want to talk about the issues, you know, and you know, early on, it was very clear that once people found out that I was a combat veteran, that it did move the needle. And I didn't understand that until somebody a lot smarter than me pointed out that it's because people are so tired of having politicians lie to them, having politicians serve their own self-interests. And combat veteran is shorthand for integrity and discipline and servant leadership and sacrifice, especially given that, you know, I used to fly with the rescue community whose motto is "these things we do that others may live." And I embodied that in my leadership when I took on the Department of Defense and the bureaucrats there to repeal the policy that was keeping 238,000 jobs closed to competition for women in the military. I basically gave up my military career because we don't have a lot of unions or workers' rights in the military. You know, when you sue the Secretary of Defense, your military career is pretty much over. So I sacrificed that for the good of our military. The Joint Chiefs unanimously wanted to repeal that policy. It was bad for our military. It was hurting recruiting and retention. I saw a way that I could help, and I stepped up. And we're not seeing a lot of that, like, backbone and grit. John Cornyn bends to his corporate donors and his party leaders like Mitch McConnell all the time. And that is really just not a Texas value. That's not something that we do in Texas.
You have challenged John Cornyn to two additional debates after the 9th. What has been his reaction so far?
Yeah, this is just another instance where his words don't match his actions. He said he would love to do more debates and yet has completely squirmed out of committing to anything else. So we want to hold him accountable to his words, and we want to give Texas voters, you know, as many opportunities as possible to compare his vision for the state with my vision for the state. And all I ask is that they do a little bit of research and back up anything that he says he wants to do for our state, and see, you know, if his actions match those words. And I think that they might be surprised. You know, everybody has so much on their plates right now. And Cornyn and the people in office right now are really counting on us to take our eye off the ball. But that's not going to happen in Texas. So I'm optimistic that we're going to win this race and that we're going to have really great servant leaders elected up and down the ballot. And that we're going to turn the nation back on track as the leaders of the free world, exemplifying the values that we were founded on from right here in Texas.
MJ Hager is the Democratic candidate facing Republican U.S. Senate incumbent John Cornyn in the fall. We'll link to this and John Cornyn's conversation with us over at our website, texasstandard.org. Ms. Hager, thanks again.
Thank you so much, David.
So what are Texans talking about on this Wednesday? Let's check in with our social media editor, Wells Dunbar.
Hi, David. Well, we're hearing from our friends and listeners about our chat with MJ Hager and her bid for John Cornyn's seat in the United States Senate. That bout for the statewide seat, one of several races we're watching closely this election season. And I should note that we're interested in other races surrounding the 2020 election,
indeed,
along with any other questions folks may have just about the act of voting in this hotly contested election. So that's why, along with other stations across Texas, we're relaunching our Texas Decides project. That's where reporters at member stations across Texas are joining forces again to tackle the 2020 campaign. So go ahead and ask any question you may have about voting. We want to hear them so we can help report those answers out. Folks can go to texasstandard.org/TXDecides, and there's a nice little form there you can fill out posing any questions you may have about the election, or just tweet us with that hashtag TXDecides, and I'll make sure it gets to the right person. Sound good, David?
Sounds great. texasstandard.org/TXDecides. That's where you'll find us online. We'd love to hear from you, Texas. Just look for Texas Standard on your social media platform of choice. Wells back in 35.
Support comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The newspaper industry was already struggling before COVID-19. According to the Poynter Institute, a media studies center, more than 50 outlets have closed or merged due to the pandemic. One of them was a North Texas paper that was shuttered during this year's economic downturn. KERA's Miranda Suarez reports on the consequences for its community.
A giant green sign downtown says, "Welcome to Mineral Wells, home of crazy." It's not an insult to the city's 15,000 residents. It's a reference to the so-called crazy water that helped fuel Mineral Wells' heyday more than a century ago.
In the early 1900s, thousands from all over the world came to drink the healing waters.
The city's mineral water was advertised to cure a whole host of ailments. As visiting Mineral Wells became more popular, businesses sprung up, and a newspaper was born. The first edition of the Mineral Wells Index rolled off the presses on May 5, 1900, and chronicled life in the city for the next 120 years. But not even crazy water can get rid of COVID-19. The pandemic drove revenue down and shuttered the paper for good in May.
The Mineral Wells community couldn't get that kind of sports or local news coverage anywhere else, and I don't think they ever will again, frankly.
That's David May. He worked for the Index for more than 15 years and served as a general manager, editor, and reporter all at once. The staff had dwindled to 4. Still, he was surprised by the closure, which came as he was already preparing to leave for another job.
Just before my 2-week notice was up, my publisher came in and told me the news that they decided to go ahead and merge with the Weatherford Democrat.
The nearby Weatherford Democrat is now responsible for covering Mineral Wells, too. These closures and mergers have become more common since the internet monopolized the ad revenue newspapers rely on. A recent study from the University of North Carolina found a quarter of American newspapers have disappeared since 2004. And according to UNC, the Index was the last newspaper in all of Palo Pinto County. An online publication called Good Day Mineral Wells has popped up in the Index's absence. But May worries whether complicated government issues will still get the coverage they warrant. And he doesn't have much faith in social media filling the gaps.
The rest of it's being left to, you know, Facebook reporting warriors, and some of those people can't even tell you what time it is looking at their watch.
One study from 2018 found voters have less influence when there's no news source keeping local politicians accountable to their constituents. Mineral Wells City Council member Beth Watson worries people won't be as involved in city government without the Index to summarize what's going on.
Some of these meetings are really boring. Let's just call them what they are.
The city hasn't just lost the paper. It's also lost a journalist with decades of experience. And Watson says David May's newspaper coverage helped facilitate conversation and even griping.
He was almost his own character in, you know, in the little local dramas. And it is, again, like we're missing that thing for people to complain about.
The Index also won't be around to chronicle a plan to revitalize Mineral Wells. The grand old Baker Hotel, built for mineral water tourists in the 1920s, towers over downtown. It's been shuttered and decaying for decades, but it's finally undergoing renovation and could help the city become a tourist destination again. Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Raymond Greenwood says it should be up and running in a couple years.
A lot of the local stores or businesses have either expanded and or improved. Some of the vacant buildings are now housing new businesses in anticipation of visitors and growth 2 years from now.
There are a few signs of life in downtown Mineral Wells, including a trendy retail space that features clothing and home decor. One of the browsers is Mineral Wells resident Connie Upshaw. She talks about what a newspaper means to a city like Mineral Wells as people come in and out of the store to shop.
It's kind of a sense of identity, like what's going on, the things that are happening in the town and the, you know, showing off the kids, you know, what they won at school and the teams and just a community that you lose when you lose your paper.
Upshaw knows the Weatherford Democrat has a Mineral Wells section, but she doesn't subscribe. She says the paper is still mostly about Weatherford anyway. I'm Miranda Suarez in Mineral Wells.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider, proud to be on the job with essential workers who are out there working safe and keeping Texas strong. More at texasmutual.com/onthejob.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. A San Antonio charter school teacher has lost her job after refusing to stop wearing a mask that says Black Lives Matter. Texas Public Radio's Camille Phillips tells us what happened and what parents think about it.
Up until a week ago, Lillian White taught art at Great Hearts Western Hills. Just before students began returning to the classroom, White says the headmaster sent her an email telling her she no longer had a job because she refused to comply with the dress code policy.
I didn't think it was going to be an issue at all. I guess that's pretty naive of me. But I didn't think at my school it was going to be causes brouhaha.
Great Hearts Texas declined to be interviewed for this story. President Dan Scogin said in a statement that face coverings are not allowed to have, quote, external messages. White says she was asked to stop wearing the Black Lives Matter mask several times before she lost her job, but she kept wearing it because she thought it was the right thing to do. She says teaching children about values and character is a big part of Greatheart's philosophy.
It's about morality, 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 truth, goodness, beauty, morality, seven virtues, morality. Like, what is moral about standing down and not supporting every student in your community?
Raquel Zapata has four children at Greatheart's Western Hills. She says White should have known that the charter network wouldn't condone any kind of political messaging.
There's always been a very clear rule at Greatheart: zero pop culture, zero print of anything political in nature or current event type, anything that's going to be anywhere distracting.
Zapata says she supports Greatheart's decision to let White go because teaching isn't the time to make political statements.
I think there is a time and a place for everything. And while I appreciate her desire to stand up for our Black students, I think she should, as a teacher, be representing all of her students.
Allison Collins, who is Black, says she appreciates what her son's former art teacher was trying to do.
For me, it's not just about politics. It's about human rights. So if my kid walks into a classroom and sees a teacher that has a mask that says Black Lives Matter or silence is violence, I would venture to think that he would be more comfortable with that teacher, with that just being an outspoken of, hey, I got you.
Collins says another Greatheart student called her son the N-word multiple times when he was in fifth grade.
And that, I think, ultimately starts at home, but it has to be carried on through at school. We will have these exact same issues, 20 years from now when my kids' kids are in school, if we don't.
Collins says she keeps her two kids at Greatheart's because they are getting an excellent education. But she says sometimes the school, like most schools, shies away from tough conversations about race and racism. Conversations that are becoming harder to avoid. I'm Camille Phillips in San Antonio.
Greatheart's Western Hills is 65% Hispanic and 7% Black, about the same as San Antonio as a whole. Well, despite the pandemic, the 10th annual Texas Tribune Festival is underway. And coming up, Trib co-founder and CEO Evan Smith reveals a closely guarded secret, we hope, dropping the name of the event's closing keynote. That's just ahead, and a whole lot more right after the Texas Roundup as the Standard continues, coming up on 29 minutes past the hour.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Harris County's plan to send mail-in ballot applications to all registered voters is once again on hold. The Texas Supreme Court temporarily blocked the effort on Tuesday while the Republican Attorney General appeals a lower court decision. A district court judge ruled Friday the state's most populous county could mail out more than 2 million applications to facilitate voting during the coronavirus pandemic. Attorney General Ken Paxton has argued Harris County's clerk is acting outside his authority. The clerk's office has already sent absentee ballot applications to voters 65 and older who are eligible to vote by mail in Texas. Meanwhile, the San Antonio Spurs hosted a drive-through voter registration event Tuesday night at the AT&T Center. TPR's Jolene Almendarez reports.
The Spurs teamed up with the nonpartisan organization Move Texas to get San Antonians registered to vote before the October 5th deadline. Volunteers for the organization would usually be on the streets daily, putting clipboards in people's hands to get them registered to vote. But the pandemic put a damper on those efforts. Nonetheless, the organization has registered roughly 33,000 people to vote this year.
I think we're seeing so many people in the NBA and across different sports and culture using their platforms at this moment because they know it is so critical that everyone makes their voice heard.
That's Move Texas Communications Director Charlie Bonner. He said 304 people were registered to vote Tuesday. I'm Jolene Almendadez in San Antonio.
Texas school districts that began the year with remote learning are rolling out their plans for students to return to campus. That includes Fort Worth ISD. The public weighed in on whether to extend online-only instruction for an additional 4 weeks during a special school board meeting Tuesday night. Maoli Viscaino's father is a teacher in the district. She raised concerns that not all schools will have access to the resources they need, such as PPE, to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
He teaches a really low income demographic, and traditionally these schools don't get anything that they need.
Meredith Hartung urged board members to give families the chance to send their kids back to school for the sake of students' mental and physical health.
Being out of school for 6 months away from friends and community has resulted in increased stress, anxiety, depression, isolation, and substance abuse.
The Fort Worth School Board ultimately voted to move forward with optional in-person learning on October 5th. And this year's World Series will be held in Arlington at the Texas Rangers' new stadium. Major League Baseball has also announced plans to host playoff series in Houston. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
Support for these Texas headlines comes from the Texas Department of Agriculture. Because of educators and school nutrition professionals, over 5 million Texas children have daily access to nutritious school meals. Many include local products. Learn more at farmfreshfriday.org.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. The pandemic has altered the way many are going about regular business, and major political events have been no different, including the 10th annual Texas Tribune Festival. This year's schedule has been all virtual and spread out over the month of September. We have some news to share with you on this Wednesday, and here to check in with the latest, Evan Smith, co-founder and CEO of the Texas Tribune. Evan, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Good morning, David. How are you?
I am doing fine, and you? I trust that the Tribune Festival, I keep seeing headlines from it. It sounds like it's doing well despite the pandemic.
It's remarkable how well we've been able to pivot this thing online. I was a skeptic. The in-person experience is something that I and so many people over the years have come to really love. And I thought, how are we going to do this in a way that's meaningful online? And it turns out that people have figured out this is the way we're interacting right now.
One of the things that I think a lot of people get excited about with every year's TribFest is who's going to be the keynote speaker. And
yeah.
I wasn't clear who that was going to be this year, but I understand that you are prepared to make a major announcement this morning.
I am. You know, the opening and closing of our festival has been something that we've worked on for many, many months in advance of announcing our lineup. And it's an important slot because it sets the tone. If you're the opening night, it sets the tone. If you're the closing night, it's the kind of grand finale, the big wrap-up, and it always has to be somebody who is appropriate for the moment and who really encapsulates so many of the threads and themes that course through the festival. So I'm very pleased to tell you and everybody listening to Texas Standard today that Bob Woodward, the legendary journalist, best-selling author, who has covered presidents going back to Richard Nixon, obviously with his partner Carl Bernstein, was instrumental in exposing the Watergate scandal, but has the book that everybody is talking about right now, just out this week, Rage. He is going to close our festival in conversation with me, talking about the revelations in Rage, talking about how he got Donald Trump to talk and talk, 10 hours of conversations on tape, 18 interviews. He'll talk about what he's learned covering 9 presidents, and he'll talk about the state of journalism today. These are important subjects, great themes, and we're honored to have Bob Woodward.
Very exciting. Yeah. Now, I don't think he's listening this morning, but I'm sure that you've thought long and hard about what sort of questions you intend to ask. What's going to be first out of the gate for you? Because there's so much ground to cover.
Well, of course, in a couple weeks, so the closing of our festival is the end of September. As you said, it's a month-long event, so September 30th. People are reasonably familiar now, and by the 30th, we'll be reasonably familiar with the specifics of the revelations in the book. I do want to talk about those and the implications of those for our country and for the election coming up, which is about 7 weeks away. I mean, it's really coming up upon us. But I'm interested as a journalist and as an interviewer myself, and hope that people will be in the process that got Woodward to this point. How do you get a president to talk? What mechanisms do you employ? What levers do you employ to get someone to sit down with you? Not once, not twice, but again, 18 times, 10 hours. We understand that so many of these interviews were conducted just between Woodward and Trump with no staff present. How do you make that work? Also, nobody doesn't see Bob Woodward coming at this point. This is Bob Woodward, right? And so, you know, the question that a lot of people have asked is, didn't the president know that he was talking to Bob Woodward? So to my mind, the substance of this book is interesting, but the process behind the substance, how Woodward got the story. Honestly, in journalism, no matter where you are, on the radio, in an online news site, if you're the Washington Post and if you're Bob Woodward, how you get the story is a story in and of itself.
Folks who are listening likely know that Evan Smith is a veteran observer of the Texas political scene, and you are, how many times have you heard national pundits talking about how Texas could be in play this year? Here we are in a most consequential general election season. Do you see any difference in 2020?
You know what, David? I'm always the last guy airlifted off the roof of the hotel at the end of the war when it comes to the will Texas turn blue question. I am the last person to be convinced that this is a serious thing. David, I'm convinced that this is a serious thing. I am convinced that Texas may very well be in play. That is not the same as saying that I believe the president is going to lose Texas to Joe Biden. I believe it will be the closest presidential election in Texas in 20 years. And I think there will be change up and down the ballot as a result of massive turnout. I do think we're in a moment of inflection in Texas politically. And so, yes, I may finally be that guy airlifted off the roof of that hotel. I believe Texas is in play.
Evan Smith is co-founder and CEO of the Texas Tribune. And you can check out the full schedule of events if you want to get in on this over at texastribune.org. Evan, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on The Standard and for the big reveal this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, David. Be well.
Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, where faculty do research for the greater good. Like biology professor Dean Williams, who uses genetic mapping to help save horned lizards from extinction. More at tcu.edu/conservation. Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas Association of Community Colleges, providing pathways for Texans to advance the individual aspirations of students while focusing on accessibility, affordability, and relevance. More at tacc.org.
Hi, I'm Catherine Newman, and I am here today to talk about my new book, which is called How to Be a Person, 65 Hugely Useful, Super Important Skills to Learn Before You're Grown Up. I have a 17-year-old daughter, and a few years ago, I had asked her to do something, you know, some like basic household thing, like clean the bathroom before her grandparents were coming. And it turned out she didn't know how to do that, and which is totally fine. No one had ever shown her, but she didn't want to be shown how to do it by a person. So I went to the library and I said to the kids librarian, you know what I need? I need your like gigantic photographic encyclopedia of tours for kids. And she was like, yeah, that's not a book we have. Like, that's not a book that actually exists. And so I pitched that book. We reframed it as a book that's partly the skills we think of, honestly, as chores. How do you unload the dishwasher? How do you sew on a button? I do warn kids that if you learn to sew on a button, you will be the designated button sewer honor for your entire household. So that skill comes with a caveat. With great power comes great responsibility, but also a lot of other skills. How do you have conversations? How do you apologize? One of the skills in the book is how do you contact your political representative? People want to talk about kids becoming independent, and that makes a ton of sense. But I really think of this as a book that's more about how to be interdependent. That's kind of the ethical arc of the book, even though some of the stuff seems really unrelated to ethics, like how do you use a vacuum cleaner? But in the end, someone's going to need to vacuum. And if your assumption is that it's not you,
That, for me, is an ethical conundrum. I feel like teaching kids to say to somebody, what can I do to help, is this enormous gift, both to them and to everyone in their lives, that you teach this skill of making yourself available to be helpful. I think it's really vital for kids' mental health right now. I think their emotional well-being is kind of tied to feeling like they're part of things, especially in a world where there's the pandemic. It's an election year, you know, we're very preoccupied with that, where there's a lot of racial injustice that we're speaking out against. And how does that relate back to like vacuuming? On top of everything else, everything still needs to happen. It's like we're out protesting and then we're back, you know, cleaning the bathroom. This is human life. Thank you so much. This is Catherine Newman, author of How to Be a Person, and you are listening to the Texas Standard.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. This fall, many schools across Texas have gone the virtual route, at least for now, but some districts are struggling to get students without internet at home online. Dallas school officials have spent months trying to make sure students without internet at home could connect using mobile Wi-Fi hotspots. As KERA contributor Sujatha Dand reports, a more permanent solution may be available soon in underserved neighborhoods.
Come on, move. Come this way.
Audra Brown steps out onto her porch holding her 2-year-old granddaughter. Her 3 school-age grandsons sit in lawn chairs playing on their iPads they got from school. They live in a public housing community in South Dallas.
My grandkids, they do reading. You know, they've been learning while school is out, no matter what.
In the spring, when the boys' school, J.J. Rhodes Learning Center, pivoted to virtual learning, Brown started paying $46 a month for broadband so the boys could do their schoolwork. But she couldn't afford to keep it up.
I got behind on a couple of bills, so I feel like the internet can, you know, hold off, and we pay lights, so rent, so, you know, I don't want to get behind on nothing.
Dallas ISD Superintendent Michael Inahosa understands Brown's dilemma. Most of Dallas ISD students come from low-income homes where high-speed internet is either unaffordable or unavailable.
The same places that don't have broadband are the same places that don't have a Starbucks, that don't have a grocery store. And so that's why it's even more important that we all deliver for the betterment of this whole community.
Dallas ISD has given out more than 15,000 mobile hotspots so students can access the internet from home. But Inahosa wants a permanent fix. Jordana Barton with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas agrees. She spent years exploring the economic consequences of unreliable internet access. The pandemic may have magnified those inequalities, but it also may be responsible for sparking a solution.
We're all working from home since the, you know, March, right? For me to do my work at the Fed, I get a computer and access to the virtual private network, and that's how I access the internet. I just thought, wow, why don't we give this to students?
Barton's idea, school districts create private wireless networks, like the one she uses at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, which connects employees to a central tower. The signal travels using public infrastructure, like city fiber, from the tower to other contact points until it reaches the employee's home. All Dallas ISD schools already have wireless connections inside them, so that same signal could be sent to where a student lives. It could be as simple as putting an antenna on the school roof and providing household routers.
You're investing in public infrastructure like cities have done for many years. As far as the capital expense, it's a one-time cost, and you're paying for it with funds, either philanthropic and or CARES Act funds, right, to solve this problem.
Federal CARES Act money to offset pandemic-related economic fallout may have allowed cities to take action. In June, San Antonio was the first city in Texas to adopt Barton's plan. The city plans to connect 20,000 students in low-income zip codes by creating private wireless networks. Dallas is following in San Antonio's footsteps.
This is a rare moment in time, and no one expected it.
Dottie Smith co-chairs the Dallas Coalition Internet for All, which includes schools, nonprofits, local governments, and telecommunication companies like AT&T and Spectrum. Private wireless networks for them mean large contracts and guaranteed revenue.
We're hoping that providers will be able to bring down the cost while keeping the broadband speed high enough to allow families to access all of the different learning experiences that they need.
DISD Superintendent Michael Inahosa wants to create long-term countywide infrastructure to ensure that all students and families have internet access in their homes for good. The city is contributing about $10 million. The school district has budgeted $40 million.
When you have the county, the city, nonprofits, you have these other entities involved, then it is a greater solution. It's just like having water and electricity. That's why this long-term solution is most important, and that's why we really put a lot of eggs in that basket.
If all goes as planned, Inahosa says the district will pilot private wireless networks at South Oak Cliff, Pinkston, Lincoln, Spruce, and Roosevelt High Schools as early as October. I'm Sujatha Dand in Dallas.
That story was produced through a collaborative partnership between KERA and the Dallas Free Press.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas Tuition Promise Fund. For over 10 years, helping families lock in current tuition rates and required fees at Texas public colleges and universities, excluding medical and dental institutions. TexasTuitionPromiseFund.com.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, sharing that regular screenings like mammograms and colonoscopies are essential preventative appointments. Early detection of cancer often leads to better outcomes. More at TexasOncology.com.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Donald Trump says that election officials are sending 80 million unsolicited ballots out across the country. Is that a fact? Here to walk us through what's factual and what isn't, Madeline Meckelberg with PolitiFact Texas, based at the Austin American Statesman. Madeline, welcome back.
Hey, David. I'm excited to be here.
So where did this claim come up? Wild guess, Twitter? No?
Actually, no. This claim is from a speech that Trump made on Labor Day. And during his remarks, which ranged on a number of subjects, he brought up mail-in voting, which is something he's been criticizing for months as some people are advocating to expand access to absentee voting during the pandemic. And this number that you're talking about here, this 80 million ballots, we've seen him say this number before, yes, on Twitter. But we have audio of his speech where he's talking about this.
Well, all right, let's take a listen.
And the dirtiest fight of all is the issuance of 80 million ballots, unrequested. They're not requested. They're just sending 80 million ballots all over the country, 80 million ballots, non-requested. I call them unsolicited ballots. That's going to be the dirtiest fight of all. People are going to get ballots. They're going to say, what am I doing? And then they're going to harvest. They're going to do all the things.
They're going to do all the things. Okay, so 80 million unrequested ballots. That's quite a claim from the president. Do we know at this point how many people will actually receive ballots for the November election? Is there any way of knowing that?
So we don't. As you know, voter registration is still open for the November 3rd election, so people can still register to vote. They can still apply for mail-in ballots if they qualify. But what we do know is that it is estimated that millions more people are expected to vote by mail this year than we've seen in previous presidential elections because of the pandemic. So there are five states that have held elections entirely through the mail before 2020. Some of them have been doing it for years. And in those states, voters who are registered, they're routinely mailed ballots as part of the voting process. Once they're registered, they don't have to send in a request to say, hi, please send me my ballot. They just get it automatically.
And you know, forgive me for interrupting. What you're saying isn't all that surprising, that we wouldn't know how many ballots in advance of the election since this is still playing out. But how did Donald Trump come up with this statement that there'd be 80 million unsolicited ballots, as he called them?
Right. So I think that this number actually came from an August story that was published in the New York Times, and they predicted that as many as 80 million ballots could flood election offices this fall. But the problem is that figure that they talked about, it's not limited to these quote unquote unsolicited ballots that he's talking about. It includes people who would have requested a ballot, which is what you have to do in Texas. We have an expand access to a broader group of people because of the pandemic. You still have to meet certain qualifications and then apply to receive your ballot. But this New York Times story that had the 80 million number, they actually found that of that number, about 44 million voters, and those are in just 9 states and Washington, D.C., those are the voters that are going to receive a ballot that's mailed directly to them without any action on that part. So that's a little more than half the figure that Trump actually cited as being these unsolicited ballots.
Very interesting. All right. So not 80, but perhaps some number less, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 million. So does that mean that you have enough information to come up with a ruling?
I think so, but I'd say that some of the voting experts PolitiFact spoke with here, they took issue with Trump's characterization of these ballots as being unsolicited because they're mailed to voters who are registered to vote. So if you're in a state where your entire election is happening through the mail and you register to vote, that's essentially you accepting that they are going to be mailing you a ballot to vote by mail.
Okay, I understand the distinction that they're trying to draw there. So what about that ruling?
So we rated this claim mostly false.
Mostly false. Donald Trump's claim that 80 million unsolicited ballots were sent out to voters. Madeline Meckelberg joins us each week from PolitiFact Texas, where she does the numbers and more. Madeline, thanks so much. Good to talk with you again.
Great speaking with you.
And you are listening
to the Texas Standard.
Monitoring the talk of Texas on this Wednesday, it's our own Wells Dunbar, social media editor. Hello again, Wells. What are you seeing?
Hey, David. Well, I got to tell you, we are getting lots of reactions to that story we brought you earlier in the program about the teacher, the art teacher in San Antonio, who was let go from her job over her refusal to stop wearing a face mask that stated Black Lives Matter. Lots of comments coming in on the Texas Standard Facebook on this story. Morgan Hamilton says it's a clear example of free speech, not meaning you're free from consequences. She adds that while I applaud her conviction, she would have done better to follow the stated dress code, keep her job, and keep her activism outside of school. Craig Anders York says that it sounds like the school is within its rights, but that doesn't make the action itself correct, though. And Randy Smith says this interesting comment: I never really understood the argument about teachers needing to leave personal beliefs at the door. There are lots of folks in this country I don't agree with, and the sooner my daughter encounters differing viewpoints, the sooner we can start to have real discussions about them. And several commenters as well, David, pointing out this tough job market that everyone finds themselves in, and the fact that the teacher basically refused to change her stance on this, and basically the conviction that it requires to have been forced out of that job in these conditions. So obviously an interesting story that's really resonating with a lot of people out there.
No question about it. A lot of people woke up this morning to news of what's happening to the east of us in the Gulf of Mexico, Hurricane Sally dumping 2 feet of rain in parts of Alabama and Florida. Some of the pictures out there, roads have been turned to rivers, cars have been submerged up to their bumpers. I believe Texas is actually sending out some first responders as well to try to help with those who may be stranded by the floodwaters right now. But a lot of people took early action as well, knowing that that's a particularly vulnerable part of the coast. And a lot of storms out there in the Atlantic now threatening too.
Incredibly busy storm season there at the Atlantic, and it's just frightening to basically see that on the heels of everything else that's happening here. Well, continuing to see a lot of response about our conversation with MJ Hager, I just remind our friends and listeners that that interview will be on our website, as is our chat with the incumbent Senator John Cornyn, and lots of folks chiming in about this one. Johnny D says this about the incumbent Senator Cornyn: this already shows he cares more about towing the GOP line and bowing to the president's whims at the expense of Texans. Lots of MJ Hager's supporters coming in with voicing their support for the candidate there. Some folks chiming in, too, about that conversation of yours with Evan Smith about the Texas Tribune Festival underway. Chris Ostertag, he cites this line from Mr. Smith: I'm convinced that Texas may very well be in play. Chris, his response, wow, maybe I'm wrong, but I still don't see it here. So definitely, you know, going to be one to watch here what happens in election night. And honestly, what's going to happen with the Texas House of Representatives on election night? That could be a big, big story. What with redistricting coming up on the heels of the census and whatnot.
And it's one we continue to follow here at the Texas Standard. Don't forget the Texas Tribune announcing today on our broadcast that Bob Woodward is going to be their featured closing speaker. That should be interesting in and of itself. Right out of time for the broadcast. The news continues at TexasStandard.org. And of course, right back here on the radio tomorrow.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Waldridge, Adrian Killam, the George Huntington Family, and St. David's Foundation. Additionally, Texas Mutual Insurance Company is a founding sponsor of Texas Standard.